7:35, time to get ready for the International Sportsman's Expo. I've been telling you to get ready for a week, and it's here tomorrow. Okay, so you better be ready tomorrow through Sunday at Cal Expo. Get down there and have yourself a blast, just like my dad will. Coming up in 20 minutes, we got our Bon Jovi contest. We'll play a little bit of a song for you by Bon Jovi. Be the first to call in. Guess what? You win tickets to the February 28th show at Golden One Center and qualify for your own bay at Topgolf this Sunday. Watch a little championship football with us. Alien Voisin had a column as we wait for Howard Beck to join us on Willie Cauley Stein today. Some interesting quotes from Willie. Says, quote, "I feel like I was showing stuff at the end of last season that would make people say, oh, damn, they got a steal in the draft. Now it's like I took 25 steps forward and 30 steps back. It's like my whole rookie season didn't matter, and I'm back at square one. Nothing I did last year is having an effect on my career. It's been very frustrating." Aileen goes on to say, now this is quoting Aileen's column, not Willie Cauley Stein, "With majority owner Vivek Ranadive's directive to assemble a roster that could compete for the eighth playoff spot in the Western Conference in year one at Golden One Center, the kids essentially have been instructed to practice hard, keep their mouths shut, and sit and watch their elders." We'll get to more of that in just a second. Right now, a proud graduate of UC Davis who's gone on to do tremendous things working for USA Today, the Daily News, the New York Times, and currently Bleacher Report, the one, the only, Howard Beck. Hello, Howard. How are you?
Good morning, guys.
How are things going in Howard Beckland? We continue to follow your career and your writings, and you're doing just a fine job.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I got a story appearing today on James Harden and the Rockets phenomenon. I think I'm only the 100th beat writer to or NBA reporter to finally get into the Rockets. But so I got that coming today if folks want to check that out. But things are going well. Thank you.
Want to ask you real quick. We'll focus here locally, of course, because that's where we are on the Sacramento Kings. We were just alluding to a story about Willie Cauley Stein in today's B. He is not happy once again with his role with the team. And Ricky Rubio is back in the news now, Howard. And if you believe the reports, the T-Wolves are looking to shop him and are not able to come to terms necessarily with the assets the Kings have to offer. How do you see that one playing out?
Well, you know, this is where the Kings find themselves. They haven't drafted particularly well over recent years. They've made a lot of, you know, what could loosely be defined as kind of win now gambits that have turned out poorly, and some of which, of course, have cost them future assets and future picks. So they're not that well positioned to make a deal. If Ricky Rubio is on the market, and, you know, I mean, he's been on the market almost annually, or at least rumored to be, there are teams out there that have better assets to offer. But, you know, there also aren't a ton of teams that are necessarily in a position to make a move for Rubio anyway. A lot of teams are already pretty well set at point guard or are at other different points in their development where they may not be making that move for him. So maybe the competition for him won't be that stiff. Maybe it won't take a lot. But the Kings have to ask themselves, as they need to constantly, who are they and where are they heading? I mean, where is this ultimately going? Are they keeping DeMarcus Cousins forever? And is that really the best way forward? If they are, who fits best with him? Does a non-shooting point guard like Ricky Rubio, who's a fantastic distributor and defender, how much does that push them forward? And I'm a Rubio fan. I like him. You know, are they going young? Or are they going old? Are they rebuilding? Are they doing this thing where they just keep patching it up and chasing the eighth seed, which is the dumbest thing in the world, by the way. And look where it's gotten them over the last couple seasons. I don't know what the agenda is anymore with that team. I'm not sure that anybody could define it.
Well, and I think that's kind of the big question right now, being here in Sacramento. It's tough to figure out, is this a team that is trying to develop for the future? You've got DeMarcus Cousins, who obviously is kind of in the prime of his career. So are you going to be developing moving forward, or are you trying to win now? And you mentioned that eighth spot, which is something I think the perception here is this organization wants to win now. They want to be a playoff team the first year in the Golden One Center. And the outside perception of it all, that's where I'm curious. What do you see as the plan for this team right now?
I don't know, Kate. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to get a sense of it other than it's very, very clear that heading into the new arena, they wanted to have a team that they thought could be a playoff team. They fell short again last year by quite a bit. And they want a team now that they're in there that's going to compete for a playoff spot. Here's the problem with that. it's not that by definition being the eighth seed is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, look, you're fodder for the Warriors. You're going to be swept out, mm-hmm. and the playoff run is going to be brief and the thrill short. But being an eighth place team isn't bad if you're a young team on the rise. If the Minnesota Timberwolves, for instance, were having their breakthrough season right now that we expected that hasn't quite come to pass, but that's a young team on the rise. When they get to the eighth seed, they will be an eighth seed in a meaningful way because it's step one toward something better. They're on a growth curve. If the Kings get there with this team, it'll be with a losing record because that's what the eighth seed is going to be this year. Mm-hmm. There's still no upward trajectory. I mean, they won 33 games last year. If they win 36 or 37 and make the playoffs, is that progress? Is that a team that's truly on a growth trajectory with Rudy Gay, you know, heading for the exits the second he can when the season ends? And obviously other changes that'll probably come after that. I mean, that's the thing. There are different kinds of eighth seeds. And the kind that the Kings are chasing, I think, is the worst kind because it's the let's get there just for the sake of being there and figure out the next step sometime later. I just don't think that's a constructive long-term plan.
Howard Beck, a Bleacher Report, joining us on KHTK. I'm asking you to speculate a little bit here, but should they fail to make that eighth seed, what are the consequences? I mean, are we looking at more instability? Is there going to be firings? I mean, I don't know that you know for sure, but I mean, gosh, there's got to be some accountability there, right?
Yeah, this is one of those other tricky things. When you've had as much dysfunction and instability as they've had, and trust me, I've seen plenty of this up close being in New York and, you know, following the Knicks for the last, you know, dozen years. The problem is these things compound themselves because, there shouldn't be consequences normally. You don't want to say, well, everything's just fine and we'll just keep plodding forward with the same group. But instability breeds instability. So at some point you have to figure out, you choose your leadership, have some faith in them, and back away and let them do their job. Part of the problem with the Kings, as it has been with the Knicks, by the way, and I've seen many parallels over the last several years, the problem is overactive, meddling ownership. Rana Dibing needs to find somebody he believes in and then just get out of the way. Stop pushing for, Rondo deals and pushing for whatever quick fixes you think are going to get you some relevance in the near term or get your co-owners off your back. Those shouldn't be the goals. Everybody loves Vlade Divac. He's, a very popular figure around the league. I don't know that anybody would say that they think that Vlade Divac is qualified to be running a team, especially after all the years he spent out of the NBA. They brought in Ken Catanella this offseason, which I thought was a great move. Smart guy, been around the league for a long time. But that front office is still small by NBA standards. I think they're understaffed. I don't know if they have the right leadership in totality right now. And they've gone through so many coaches that, if they lose and they want to blame Jaeger, I mean, they can. But, that's not getting them anywhere either, changing out coaches again. How many more guys can Cousins go through?
Howard Beck joining us. And Howard, continuing that point, and you're absolutely right, and you know this, that Vlade is – a basketball Jesus here and is by all accounts, by anybody who's dealt with him, one of the most wonderful people on the planet. But it is a fair question. I don't think Vlade would want any favors because of his personality. So I want to try to continue to push a possible narrative with you that I've been pushing around here and been getting killed on. So feel free to kill me. But just occurs to me that Philadelphia is three wins behind the Sacramento Kings, and as you know, they have the swappability with their pick this year, and they own the Kings unprotected in 2019. So when Nate talks about accountability, Sam Hinkie is still teaching right now in Santa Clara. He's hanging around Stanford, and he seems like that type of Silicon Valley mind that would be very attractive up here. I'm not going to ask you if Vivek would hire Sam and fire Vlade, but I do want to ask you, are you sensing a bit of the reclamation of Sam Hinkie's reputation because of what Philly's doing this year, or is it too early for that?
No, I think the reclamation is in progress. And look, I'm a huge Sam fan. I think he is brilliant. I think what he was doing in Philly, people might take issue with what was going on there on a moral basis, competitively speaking. They may disagree with any number of things. And Sam made his mistakes, for sure. But what Sam Hinkie did in terms of having a long-term plan and executing it. I mean, they knew exactly what they wanted. And this is what I mean by you know, having a plan for your franchise, a long-term vision. You can disagree with what the 76ers were doing during that period of time, but Sam Hinkie stuck to his convictions. He knew what he wanted to do. He knew how he was going to do it, and he pursued it. And here they are now with Joel Embiid looking like one of the best young bigs in the league, putting up phenomenal numbers, and seems like a great guy to be around besides. And they've got Ben Simmons waiting in the wings there when he gets healthy. Dario Saric is playing pretty well. So they've got some promise. You would rather and they've got picks, and you would rather be in their position than in the Kings' position.
Howard, I'm curious, when you look at the NBA right now, there are some big names outside of just what's going on here in Sacramento. There are some big names that are up in the news right now, as some disgruntled employees, maybe Carmelo Anthony being one of them. He has that no trade clause. What do you think the likeliness is in your mind of something happening with him and him being with a different team before the end of the season?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think, you know, the Knicks and Carmelo Anthony have been doing this dance for a few years now, where I feel like, you know, Carmelo's had opportunities to get out via free agency and he chose not to. And the Knicks have had their opportunities prior to that to trade him before he had the no trade clause. I don't understand to this day why they gave him the no trade clause. He had no leverage with them. They were the only ones who could offer him the money that he wanted. They gave him a near max deal a couple of years ago, which, again, I'm not sure was justified. And so here they are, where, you know, he doesn't really fit where they are right now. They've got to be building around Kristaps Porzingis and figuring out, you know, as I say again, the best franchises have a long-term vision and they execute it. The long-term vision for New York should be, what do we do to build around this phenomenal young player that we got, you know, in the draft a couple Junes ago in Porzingis? And Carmelo's horizon doesn't fit that. He's 32, 33 in a couple of months. And having one of his worst seasons statistically, his efficiency is way down. It makes sense to have a breakup, but that no trade clause is a problem. And Carmelo's desire to be in New York is an obstacle for them. So I don't know how this is going to end, but I think that at the latest, in, you know, July of 2018, he can be a free agent. And I think if he's not gone by then, I think he'll certainly go then.
Howard, paired with the fact that there's something going on there between Phil Jackson and Carmelo Anthony, there's been a lot of stuff in the media that it's like, okay, they're kind of having it out in the media, obviously not behind closed doors. Then you actually enter into the Derrick Rose situation. How much validity is there to the rumors that there is a problem between he and Jeff Hornacek?
Well, I don't think that this team if you're asking about relations between anybody in this team, you know, at this point, I think everything is strained. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no happiness in a locker room where they're going through the kind of season they're going through, and especially the investments they made to acquire Rose and to sign Joakim Noah. That was another team that, you know, they were kind of chasing the eighth seed, really. They did the quick fix plan last summer, and it's kind of blowing up in their face. I don't think Rose and Hornacek have been on the same page. I do think there's tension there. I, at this point, think that, you know, to the extent that they were taking a one-year flyer on Rose, I don't think it's worked well. I don't think Rose will be back. If they could move him at the deadline and get something for him, I think they would. But, you know, we'll see. I don't expect to see him re-signed by New York this summer.
You know, Howard, with all of these kind of leaks media-wise in the ship for the Knicks, you get the feeling that maybe Phil Jackson does some of this stuff to distract people from the fact that he's pretty likely a lousy executive that put together an awful team that may be running a system that has been passed by the game.
Well, they're really not running the triangle anymore. There's been a fixation on that. And, you know, they were going to use triangle elements now, and they weren't going to run a full triangle and all that. There's not much of it there. I mean, it's the offense isn't the issue. Phil Jackson's leadership is certainly one of the issues for them, maybe even a primary issue. He hasn't distinguished himself as an executive, but, you know, it's always a strange thing, because you never quite know for sure whether the person in charge is the person in charge and how much James Dolan behind the scenes, the owner, is doing. Some of what Phil did for the last couple of years kind of made sense to me. And then there were times like last summer where all of a sudden he shifted gears and went hard for the patch it up, get some veterans and try to win now, that to me smacked of, you know, the Knicks of the past, where it was always going for the quick fixes. And to me, that smacked a little bit of Dolan's influence. And I don't know for sure, but it felt that way. But, yeah, I mean, look, on balance, Phil's run as team president has not been glorious.
Howard Beck, Bleacher Report, joining us. Howard, as we wrap up, I want to ask you about the Clippers. Chris Paul out 6 to 8 weeks. J.J. Redick set to be a free agent this summer. Talk a little bit about the Clippers' future, and are we seeing the beginning of the end for the Clippers as we know them?
I kind of hope not. I like them as a foil to the Warriors. And, Chris Paul's one of the, like, he's not going to get credit. It's for being forgotten already because, people are now fixated on their playoff failures. Chris Paul's one of the great point guards we've ever seen. And Blake Griffin's phenomenal. DeAndre Jordan's a good player. J.J. Redick has been great for them. And when they're healthy, that's a team that I think a lot of people thought, no one is expected to beat the Warriors, but they could actually challenge them. And they could hit them in some spots where the Warriors might be a little bit weaker, in the front court. And the idea that this may be the end because of another series of injuries that's going to end in disappointment for them for the season, it's not the way you want to see it go. Like, if they were going to break it up because they just couldn't break through, that's one thing. But the injuries cut them short last spring. They've cut them short before, and now we've got, Blake Griffin has been out. Now Chris Paul's out for a couple months, may not come back to the very tail end of the regular season. I don't know where that leaves them for the playoffs, but all of a sudden a team that you thought, hey, look, a break goes their way here or there, maybe they could knock off the Warriors in a series. It just doesn't even sound plausible anymore because of all the misfortune. It's really going to be really expensive to keep that team together. And so, do you do that? If you let those guys walk, what are you left with? Who are you retooling around? It's not like they have some surplus of young players to rebuild with. They've sent out a lot of picks over the last couple of years. And so, I feel like no matter how the season goes, they almost have no choice but to just bring everyone back, assuming that they all want to come back.
Howard, you mentioned at the beginning of the interview you were writing something coming out about James Harden. They're having a tremendous year, and James has been given the keys by the coach. D'Antoni's having a great year, and they look like they could be a possible foil for the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, the glitch there or the handicap there, if they're going to meet the Warriors in a playoff series, of course, is going to be defense.
Yep.
They're better than they appear, just like with the Suns. We now have the benefit of stat sites that show us, the pace-adjusted stats. They're middle of the pack defensively. They're not terrible, and they're so potent offensively that they can just crush a lot of teams. It's going to be different against the Warriors, who have just as much, even more, offensive firepower, obviously. And the Rockets, if you can find a way to contain Harden or make him, a low percentage guy in a series or any given game, they don't really have great second options. They've got really great shooters in Gordon and Anderson and some other guys who can do some things, but nobody else who can create. And the Warriors are just so stacked in that regard. And so, could the Rockets make it fun and entertaining? Yes. Can I see them beating the Warriors in a series with they have, in a very Harden-centric offense? I think when you become too one-dimensional in the playoffs, that usually means a quick exit for you, especially against a team like the Warriors.
Always appreciate your time. Howard, UC Davis' own, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Go Ags.
Thanks, Howard.
Care. That's Howard Beck of Bleacher Report. We will take a break. Before we do, though, it's time, Golfing on a Prayer. Very simple. We've got a bay for you to golf out at Top Golf this Sunday for Championship Sunday. Now, we're taking qualifiers all week long, and the qualifying prize are tickets to Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi's playing at Golden One Center February 28th. So what we've been doing and what we'll do right now is play a snippet of a Bon Jovi hit. It's a hit, not just some random B-sider. You be the first to call in with the name of the song. Not only do you get the Bon Jovi tickets, but you qualify to go to Top Golf this Sunday. Matt, yes, Nate.
It's got
to
be a hit, man. Come on. Real Bon Jovi fan?
I mean, the trick here.
Not going to get into the deep cuts?
What I'm really afraid of, and this is why radio bits are always fun, is that we're going to get somebody who's like a massive Bon Jovi fan, and then they win the Top Golf prize, and they're like, meh. Or they're a Top Golf fan, but they, this kind of, we know they like Bon Jovi, and this is their key to get in. If we minimize it too much and make deep cut to Bon Jovi, I mean, we need golfy Bon Jovi people. Give us the snippet there, Matt. Got it. I got it. All right. let's just say that, let's see. That was an earlier Bon Jovi song, I believe. I believe that was leading into the hook of that entire song. There we go. Calls already. 339-1140. 1-800-920-1140. In just under an hour at 8:40, you're going to be able to text in to win tickets to Monster Jam. January 20th through the 22nd at Golden One Center. Listen for the keyword. Text it to 441140 in just under an hour at 8:40, and you will win. When we get back, we've got all kinds of stuff for you. Michael Irvin had some comments on Antonio Brown. Speaking of diva wide receivers, also Jerry Jones on Tony Romo, and Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger on that whole Antonio Brown situation. So we got a lot of sound for you. We'll also play for you what George Carl said to D'Lo and Jason and Ken yesterday on the Lowdown. You can grab that interview in its entirety at khtk.com. Back in 3 minutes. Don't go away on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK.